I'm Michael Buettner. Today I'll be talking about computational RFID, which is an emerging class of computing device that runs entirely using harvested RF energy. This work is done with Ben Greenstein at Intel Labs, Seattle, and David Weatherall at the University of Washington. The key question today is, how can we run programs on embedded computers using only scavenged RF energy? And if we can do this, and if we can do it well, that'll give us battery-free, nearly invisible sensing and computation, which is key to truly ubiquitous computing applications. So imagine the following scenario. As our population ages, there's an increased focus on keeping the elderly in their homes longer. So there's two reasons we want to do this. One is it decreases the healthcare costs, and more importantly, it dramatically increases the quality of life. But to keep elders in their home, the caregivers and their families need to know that they're safe. One way that we can know this is by tracking what objects they're using and how they're using them. And if we have this information, we can get a pretty good sense of what they're doing. So we can keep track of their medication adherence, whether they're eating, whether they're sleeping, things like this. So what we want to enable this application is a non-intrusive way to gather fine-grained data on object use. So there's existing solutions to this problem, and one of the major ones that we've seen a lot is cameras. So there's cameras in the apartment, and the video streams are viewed remotely. So the only reason I actually bring this up is because right now this is the state of the art, and this is used pretty widely. But there's some pretty obvious privacy concerns, so we're trying to move away from this. Another solution is to use moat-based sensor networks. So the idea here is that you take wireless sensor moats that are powered with a battery. They have sensors like accelerometers, and they can transmit data from the sensors wirelessly to a base station. So if you take these sensor moats and you put them on objects in the space, you can tell when the objects are used by tracking the accelerometer data. But there's some drawbacks to this, and a lot of this revolves around the fact that they're battery-powered. So, for instance, the battery really limits the size on these. So energy density of batteries is not scaling with Moore's law. So devices are getting smaller, but the batteries aren't getting as small as quickly. So you can imagine putting these motes on a door or a wheelchair, but you can't imagine putting them on a medicine bottle or disposable things like food packaging. So the other problem is lifetime. So eventually the batteries will die. People will need to come and find those sensors and replace the batteries. And this is kind of a hassle. It also increases maintenance costs. Right now, it's really infeasible to deploy fine-grained networks of moats on tens or even hundreds of everyday objects, which is what we want to get fine-grained activity recognition. So our proposed solution, what we'll be talking about today, is computational RFID. So computational RFID builds on passive RFID, which is the kind of RFID that's used by companies like Walmart to track objects through their supply chain. Computational RFID adds to this is general-purpose computation and sensing. So these networks consist of two components. One is an RFID reader, which transmits an RF signal and also commands. And the second component is the computational RFID tags, which are battery-free, and they harvest the RF energy from the reader to do computing and sensing. They can transmit data back to the RFID reader. So the prototype hardware for these devices is just now becoming available in the past few years. But the goal is to get it down to an RFID tag sticker form factor, and where the cost of each will be on the order of $1. So while the hardware has been available for a few years, there hasn't been a lot of work on how you actually run programs on these devices. And this is where Dewdrop comes in. So what we want is the application developer to be able to write a program, load it on these devices, and trust that that program will execute as often as possible and at the longest range as possible. So, and this is exactly what Dewdrop enables. So it uses the scarce available energy to run programs even when the programs have widely different energy needs or when they're non-deterministic, so their per execution energy will be different, and when the input power is varying by two orders of magnitude. So as I'll show you near the end of the talk, Dewdrop is able to run a variety of programs at close to their maximum rate and in environments when they wouldn't otherwise run. So for this is the outline of the rest of the talk. I'm first going to talk about the Intel WISP, which is CRFID tag prototype, which we use for this study. I'll then look at the challenges that Dewdrop needs for running these programs efficiently, and then I'll describe the design and I'll evaluate the system. So the Intel Wireless Identification Sensing Platform, or WISP for short, is a prototype CRFID tag. And in the picture, you can see it next to a standard RFID tag and then next to a sensor mode, just to get a sense of the form factor. It has a 16-bit microprocessor, a range of sensors, and the one that we've used a lot is a 3D accelerometer. Has a 10 microfarad capacitor for storing energy for executing programs with, and it has a maximum range of 4 meters using standard RFID readers. And the nice thing about having it interoperate with standard RFID readers is that then we can leverage all of this kind of existing infrastructure that already exists for traditional RFID. So these devices are in use at 30 universities, and so far we've seen 50 publications come out of them. So what are people doing with these WISPs? So there's a lot of interesting applications. There's been exercise and sleep monitoring where the WISPs are put on the body so you can tell how the person is moving. There's also been neural monitoring and medical implantation, security for medical implants. And the idea is here, what they're really leveraging here is the fact that RF can penetrate the body. So you can do sensing inside the body without the need for batteries or wires, which is what's used now. There's also been just cold chain data monitoring. And an interesting application is the WISP prototypes have been used in undersea neutrino detector. There's been work on RFID security and some other work on CRFID programmability. But with most of these WISP applications, they've been evaluated less than 1 meter from the reader. And the reason that they do this is that when you're closer to the reader, there's a lot of energy. So these programs don't need to execute very efficiently. So they've really proven the usefulness of these devices. But what we want is a way that these applications can run more efficiently so they can be run in more scenarios. So there's four main challenges to running programs efficiently that Dewdrop needs to keep in mind. The first is that CRFIDs have minuscule energy store. So the capacitor stores 8 orders of magnitude less energy than a pair of AA batteries. Second is the programs have different energy needs. So if we're trying to figure out how to run these programs, we have to take into account that the programs will have entirely different energy needs. Also, platform inefficiencies with respect to how the platform stores energy and also how the platform consumes energy. And the fourth challenge is that energy is harvested even while you're executing programs, and I'll explain why this is a challenge. So CRFIDs have very small energy stores. So what you're actually trying to do is store enough energy just to execute the program once. And there's two states that CRFID tags use. One is a low power mode, where it consumes very little energy, and this is the state that it's in when it wants to store up energy into that capacitor. And it also maintains any state that the tag has. And the second mode is an active mode, where it burns a lot of energy, but this is where the computation sensing takes place. So if you look at the figure, this shows the life cycle of a program on a tag. So in the lower left corner, this is where the reader turns on. So the CRFID tag is now storing up energy until a certain point when it begins execution of the program. The program executes, and it consumes energy from the storage until the program is done, and it returns to the low power mode and stores up more energy. So to get a sense of the time scales we're working at here, the charging time is generally hundreds of milliseconds, and the discharge time to consume all of the stored energy is on the order of tens of milliseconds. So they're very short time scales that we're working with here. And the other thing that you'll notice from the figure is that if you start executing a program too early and you run out of energy, you'll drop below this blackout threshold for the tag. And you really want to avoid this, because when you drop below the blackout threshold, you lose any state you had. And effectively, you've done a lot of work, burned a lot of energy, and didn't achieve your goal. So from the point of view of Dewdrop needs to figure out how to store enough energy to complete one execution of the program before it begins that execution. But, of course, this is difficult because depending on the program, you need to store different amounts of energy. So you could imagine a program that just takes a sensor value, which is going to be very lightweight, or a heavier weight program which takes a sensor value and communicates it back to the reader. Also, the task can be non-deterministic. So the RFID protocol is fundamentally non-deterministic. So if your program is communicating with the reader, you're going to have non-deterministic energy use, which complicates figuring out how much energy to store. And programs on these tags are run to completion. So if you begin communicating with the tag, with the reader, if a tag begins communicating with the reader, it can't just stop partially through and kind of resume that later. It actually has to execute the full stream of messages to complete that program. The one thing that makes our task a little bit easier is that tags only run one program. There's no sense of multitasking on these devices. So Dewdrop needs to figure out how to, based on the program that's running, it needs to figure out how much energy to store before starting that execution. The next challenge is that these tags have inefficiencies. So they use capacitors to store energy. The reason they use capacitors is they last indefinitely. They can recharge. Batteries are chemical components, so eventually that breaks down and they'll stop recharging. Capacitors, they'll recharge indefinitely. But the tricky thing about capacitors is that the more energy that's stored in it, the longer it takes to store additional energy. It gets more and more difficult to put energy in when there's already energy there. And the reason why this is problematic from the point of view of Dewdrop is if you can imagine this figure here where it charges, and as it approaches that maximum, the charging rate gets a little bit slower. But what you could do is actually execute that task a little bit earlier. So if you overcharge, there's this penalty for wasted time. So if you're trying to execute the program efficiently and as often as possible, there's this time penalty for overcharging past a certain point. And additionally, the microprocessor on these devices needs a fixed input voltage. So if you have a lot of energy in the capacitor, the voltage of the system is going to be high. So you're going to have to regulate that voltage down to what the processor uses. And that in that process, there's always some inefficiency. So you're actually going to have an additional penalty for operating at a higher voltage. So Dewdrop needs to find needs to store enough energy, but it doesn't want to store too much energy because that's going to negatively impact performance. And the last challenge is that energy is harvested even while you're executing. So you're trying to find this perfect amount of energy so that you're not overcharging. But that really depends on how close you are to the reader, how much input power you're getting. So when you're closer, you're going to charge faster, but you're also going to pull less energy out of your storage capacitor because there's energy going in while you're executing. And this is further complicated by the fact that due to FCC regulations, these readers need to jump frequencies every 400 milliseconds. So now your program is non-deterministic, and also that your input power is non-deterministic also. So this complicates it because now you need to think about what program you're executing and also the particular RF environment. So I've talked about the challenges in kind of an abstract sense, and now I'll show you what the implications of that is for programs actually running on the WISP, which is our actual real tag. So what this figure shows is the execution rate of the task running, and that's the y-axis. And along the x-axis is the wake-up voltage. And what the wake-up voltage is that really indicates how much energy was stored before the task began executing. So for this program running in the WISP, it's a light task. It just takes a samples accelerometer. And it's at 1.5 meters. The ideal operating point here is to charge up to 1.8 volts. If you charge a little bit less, your task is going to fail. And if you charge more than that, you're going to have that penalty from overcharging, which is you can see the response rate dropping here. And here's another example, which is a second task. And this task is a little bit heavier, and it samples the accelerometer and additionally transmits that that data back to the reader. But in this case, that ideal operating point is 2.5 volts before you begin executing. And if it only charged to 1.8 volts, that task won't really execute at all. So what this tells us is that you can't really find a threshold that's going to work well for the range of programs you need to run. But there's a third case, which is the same task as the previous slide, but now instead of 1.5 meters, we're at 3 meters. What happens here is that supplemental power is so much lower that you actually need to charge up to 3 volts before you begin executing. And if you only charge to 2.5 volts, that task isn't going to run very well. So this just reiterates that you need to think about the program, but also you need to think about the environment, which means that a tag actually needs to do an online adaptation mechanism to find this right operating point. So now I'll talk about how the design of Dewdrop and how it actually implements this adaptation algorithm. So the goal here with Dewdrop is to let an application developer write a program, load it onto the CRFID, and what Dewdrop does is it'll adaptively find the wake-up voltage that maximizes the execution rate for that task and given that RF environment where that tag is. And there's two factors that are going to reduce the execution rate that we need to balance out. One is if you don't store enough energy, the program is going to fail, and it's going to take time to recharge, and you didn't do any real useful work. And the other side of it is that if you store too much energy, you're going to have this overcharging penalty. So we need to find a happy medium between those two. But there's one hard constraint here, which is that the runtime operation must be very, very simple. So every active cycle is going to cost energy. You want to spend all of your time in that low power state unless you're doing useful work. And second, these are very simple devices. There's no floating point. There's no hardware multipliers or divide. So our goal here is to maximize the execution rate. And the way that we do that is by minimizing the time wasted from program failures and from overcharging. And since we can't calculate this directly, what we use is a heuristic. And the heuristic is that the total waste from both of these is going to be minimized when the overcharging cost is equivalent to the cost from failures. So this heuristic doesn't guarantee that it's going to give us the best operating point, but it does assure that neither of those sources is consuming too much time, and it gives us a reasonable operating point. So the way that Dewdrop actually implements this is when a program completes execution, we update a running average based on the time from overcharging. We can do this because we know how much energy is left in the capacitor, we know what our charging rate was, so we can get an estimate from that time penalty. And on the other side, when a program fails, we update a running average of the time wasted from failed tasks. And then if the average time from overcharging is greater than the average time from failing, then we decrease the wake-up threshold by a small amount. And otherwise, we increase the wake-up threshold, and we re-execute the task. So to give you a better idea of how this actually works in practice, here's a plot that shows the response rate at different wake-up thresholds for a task running on the WISP. It also shows you the time wasted from failures and the time wasted from overcharging. So if you look at about 2.2 volts, the task isn't executing or isn't succeeding at all. The response rate is essentially zero. But there's some amount of time wasted from failures. And the reason that this increases as it goes up towards 2.4 volts is because the task isn't getting very far before it fails. So the per execution time is wasted is relatively small, but it's never succeeding. So once you get past 2.6 volts, you can kind of see the response rate go up and the wasted time from task failure is going down. But once you get to about 2.8 volts, this is when that penalty from overcharging kind of starts to kick in. And at 3 volts, this is where the wasted time from overcharging is approximately equivalent to the wasted time from failed tasks. As you can see, that also correlates very well with a good operating point where the execution rate is very high. So I won't talk too much about the implementation details, but there's a few things that I did want to talk about. One is the low-power wake-up mechanism that we use. So we talk about this ideal threshold that the device should be waking up at, but there's no hardware mechanism that triggers you to wake up at this specified voltage. So what Dewdrop needs to do is it pulls the capacitor voltage periodically to check how close it is to that target, and when it reaches the target, then it goes into active mode. But the problem here is if you wake up too often, you're going to be burning a lot of energy being awake. But conversely, if you wake up too infrequently, you're going to overshoot your threshold, and you're going to pay that overcharging penalty again. So what we use is, and the second thing to consider is that input power is varying over two orders of magnitude. So when you're close, you charge very quickly, and when you're far away, you charge very slowly. So we use an exponentially adapted polling interval, and we show in the paper that this is lightweight and also very accurate. And the second part of this mechanism is the low-power voltage sampling. So every time you wake up, you're going to consume some amount of energy being active and checking the voltage level. So one way to reduce that is do it less often. But the second way is we actually reduce the cost of each wake-up by a factor of 4. So now we have a very light, programmable way to wake up at a given target voltage. So now I'll talk about the system evaluation. So what we really want to get at here is, how does Dewdrop help you implement applications? How does it increase the usefulness of these applications? So what this plot is going to show is for two different tasks. One is the light task, which just senses, and one's a heavy task, which senses, returns that value back to the reader. And we look at the execution rate versus distance for those two tasks for two different runtimes. So one of the runtimes is Dewdrop. And the other runtime is a very efficient but very inflexible hardware mechanism. And this was the state of the art before Dewdrop was introduced. And the way that this works, it stores a small amount of energy and executes the task. And the amount of energy it stores is independent of what program is or what the RF environment is. So if we just look at the light task first, what we see is that Dewdrop matches the performance of the hardware. And the hardware, this program is very well matched to the hardware. This is about as well as it could execute. So Dewdrop, even with this flexible mechanism, is still lightweight enough to execute this task just as well as the hardware. And the second thing you'll notice is that the response rate drops off with distance, and that's exactly what you would expect, because the energy available at a certain distance from the reader is going to drop off as 1 over d squared. So you would expect the execution rate would also. But one of the major problems here is if you look at the heavy task using the hardware scheduler, which is the black dashed line, on the bottom, you see that it drops off very quickly. So at 1.5 volts, it's not functioning very well at all, or at 1.5 meters. And out at 2 meters, it doesn't execute at all. And this compared to Dewdrop, where Dewdrop actually falls very smoothly. So it uses that energy very efficiently and falls off with distance, which is exactly what we would hope. So what this shows is that Dewdrop actually doubles the range using this heavy task for this heavy task. So what this plot does is it drills in a little bit on 3 points from that prior slide. So this is basically the same data, looking at the light task at 1.5 meters and the heavy task at 1.5 and 3 meters. And this is also the same data that you saw earlier from the implications. And on top of this, what we've laid on is the operating points that Dewdrop found when it was running the same tasks. So where the other data was found using an exhaustive search of wake-up mechanisms, these points show where Dewdrop found adaptively. And the first thing to see is that Dewdrop finds a point which is within 0.1 volt of the best of the best operating voltage. And this isn't just for these three, this is actually across all of the tasks, across all of the distances. And the second thing that you see is that Dewdrop achieves better than 90% of the max operating rate. So it finds the right voltage, and it also has a very good rate, because the overhead costs about that 10%, but it doesn't cost any more. And the last thing that we looked at is we're kind of revisiting that elder care scenario. So what we do is we have one RFID reader that's in the ceiling, and we have 11 WISPs arrayed in the apartment, and we do three trials. And what the trials are is we're gathering streaming sensor data. So they take an accelerometer value, and they return that back to the reader. What we're trying to do is get as many tags as possible returning values above about 1 per second, because this will give us really fine-grained activity recognition. And the way that we kind of show how well Dewdrop works over a range of received powers is we decrease the transmit power. So at 30 dBm, this is 1 watt being transmitted. When we use Dewdrop, all of the tags can respond better than once per second, whereas if you use the hardware mechanism, only 60% of the tags will. And as this difference between the two only increases as you decrease the transmit power. So 24 dBm is actually the transmitter's transmitting 1/4 as much RF power. And in this case, if you use the hardware mechanism, none of the tags can actually respond at a useful rate, where with Dewdrop, we're still getting about 45% of the tags. So this shows that Dewdrop can run these programs with significantly less power. And it also gives us more application coverage when we're trying to build systems like this elder care scenario. So there's a few things that I hope you'll take away from this talk. One is that running programs using harvested RF energy is actually feasible today. And this gives us battery-free computation sensing, which is useful because it can be very small, it can be very cheap, they can be perpetual, and they can also be embedded in any object or any structure where RF will penetrate. Dewdrop makes these kind of devices, these computational RFIDs, more usable because programmers can just write a program and trust that it will run well on these tags. And it also makes it more useful because these applications just work better at longer ranges. And the WISP I talk about communicates at, or it can function at about 4 meters, but technology trends are definitely on our side. So the range that you can power these devices has been doubling every 4 years, and we're currently working on a WISP 5.0, which has better range and better power performance across the board. And the other thing is that these WISPs and all of these tools are available. So WISPs, the hardware and the software is open source, so you can build your own WISPs. You can also talk to us. If you give us proposals, we can give you WISPs to use and build systems out of. And also, I built a USRP, so it's a software-defined radio RFID reader, which gives you control of the RFID reader also. So now you can actually build entirely new systems using the WISP and a programmable reader. And if you have any more questions about any of this, you can go to the WISP webpage. You can just contact me directly or go to the Sensor Systems Group. And with that, I'll take questions.
Deepak Ganesan from UMass. I'm wondering how you deal with the harvesting dynamics when you're mobile. It seems like the operating point, we're all in static scenarios, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, it depends how quickly you're moving. So if you stay generally the same distance, you'll have some variation from the frequency selective fading and some differences in movement, but they won't be that dramatic. You'll still be close to the operating point. We didn't actually look at how quickly it converges. So for instance, if you turned and put it behind your body, or if you put it in a box or something like that, you could have dramatic differences, but for general kind of object use, there won't be any dramatic change in how much energy it's getting over small
so,
scales.
So this is mostly intended for somewhat static scenarios?
Somewhat static or slow moving. I mean, if you're actually at a walking rate across a room, we expect that this would be able to track and give you a good operating point.
Even better for elder care.
Hi, Hari Balakrishnan from MIT.
Hi.
Thanks for the really nice talk. I had an idea when you were talking, and I wanted to know if you thought about it or whether this is just a really bad idea. If you have a task which in fact involves a lot of computation on the tag side, mm-hmm. does it make sense to think about putting 100 tags on some object that you're trying to track and partitioning your computation so every tag does a small amount of the computation and they send their stuff back? So as an example, if you want to track something at, let's say, 1,000 hertz, uh-huh. Like an acceleration sensor for acceleration, have 500 tags each doing it at 4 hertz and somehow combining that up. Is that something that even is interesting?
Yeah, it's interesting. Right now with the current WISP, a lot of the cost is actually communication. So The nice thing about the WISP is that all of the decoding the message and transmitting messages is done in software. That's nice because you can just build new protocols. You can update it when the next version of the RFID protocol comes out. The downside is that anytime you're communicating, you're burning a lot of energy. So the problem with splitting it across multiple tags is that they're all going to pay that communication cost. Or if you run it kind of in just one node, the computation cost could kind of be, the communication cost could be amortized over more computations. Even one transaction actually costs more than you could compute for a very long time for the same cost as a single communication. But that's one of the things we're looking at the WISP 5.0, is if we're assuming that this communication is going to be the same, you're just going to be talking to an RFID reader, you can push it into a CPLD or something very low power, in which case it might make a lot more sense, because then the communication cost wouldn't be so much of your energy budget.
I'm curious, so it seems like there are two problems here. One is, for a task, how much energy does it consume? For an RFID, it seems like the set of tasks you want to execute are pretty limited. I mean, you might want to sample, you might want to store in flash, you might want to communicate, you might want to encrypt or something like that. It's a small set of tasks, and you can a priori profile it to figure out how much energy that consumes. But the second part of the problem is that you don't know how much energy you're harvesting. So I'm curious, suppose you know that these are the set of tasks you're going to run. Why not solve just the figuring out how much energy you're harvesting problem by just estimating it online? Does that make sense?
Yeah, the difference is that it's very hard to really measure the rate that you're getting energy, because one, it varies relatively quickly. And it sometimes, if you're running a task very near the reader, you don't need to store any energy at all. So it can actually have a very profound impact on your operating point. So, and secondly, you can't always offline profile all tasks. So for instance, this communication is non-determinism. So the level of non-determinism is going to depend on how many other devices are in your area. So if you profiled when you were the only tag, and you're now in an environment where there's 100 tags, your energy cost is much, much higher. So you can't even offline profile all tasks.